on the project website shortly after this meeting ends. All attendee meetings are currently muted. If you've joined through your web browser, please feel free to use the comments box with comments and questions during this WebEx presentation. That's located on the right-hand side of the screen. And then if you've called in on your telephone, you're currently muted now, but I'll unmute everyone's microphones during the question and answer session. And then also, I don't believe anyone who's on their computer is using their webcam, but if you are, I'll just ask you to turn that off just for the sake of saving some bandwidth. So with that, just provide you a little bit of an overview of what we hope to do with this meeting. Really, the primary goal of this meeting is to give you a better understanding of the Angstrom to Grissom Power Improvements Project, but we'd also like to give you an understanding of the Public Utility Commission of Texas's approval process, and then most importantly, give you an opportunity to ask questions directly to the AEP Texas project team. So that said, just kind of as a general note, I would like to say that if you have questions specifically regarding your property, would ask you to use the contact us link via the project website, which is aeptexas.com/angstrom-grissom. And that way we can have a project team member respond to you directly about any questions or concerns specific to your property. And again, I apologize for everyone that's on the phone. I'll repeat that URL now, but I'll also repeat it a few times throughout this presentation. So again, that website is aeptexas.com/angstrom-grissom. That's angstrom-grissom, G-R-I-S-S-O-M. So before we get started, I did want to take a brief moment to introduce the AEP project team members we have joining us on this evening's call. This group represents about every aspect of the project, so would like to encourage you to use this town hall as an opportunity to hear directly from them. So let me just go through this list real fast. Joining us tonight are Teresa Trotman, a project engineer, Dan Lyons and Doug Lee from our project planning group, Randy Roper and Mel Eckhoff from regulatory, JC Garvin and Nancy Folk from engineering, Philip Castillo and Velma Starr with right-of-way, Kinsley Gruder and Stacey Santos with siting, Ben Bowers with our environmental group, Juliet Capehart, who's going to help moderate our comments section, and then again, I'm Michael Harris with our project outreach group. So let me just give you a really brief overview of this project. The Angstrom to Grissom Power Improvements Project involves constructing approximately 17 miles of 345 kilovolt transmission line. This line is intended to support industrial growth in the Sinton region and will stretch from the new Angstrom station to the Grissom station. And I'll present a map of this on the following slide. But for those of you on the telephone, the Angstrom station will be located approximately 4 miles east of Sinton along Texas Highway 188. And the Grissom station will be about 8 miles east of Skidmore. So for those of you viewing on your computer, what you're now seeing is an overview map of the proposed project. We'll just say each of these proposed lines that you see on the map is what we call a preliminary routing link. We'll discuss these links in greater detail later in this presentation, but for now, I would just like to note that these links are just potential options identified by AEP and don't represent the final line route. That determination will be made by the Public Utility Commission. Okay, so this next slide just gives a quick overview of the needs and benefits for the for this project, but did just want to highlight a couple key aspects. First being that this project will allow us to provide greater power capacity for the growing industrial sector in San Patricio, Bee, and Refugio counties. And along that line, further support economic development along the Texas Gulf Coast. Then also the project would provide a safe, reliable grid system. And just for those folks who are on the phone, again, I would just mention that these slides are also all available on the project website. We have a chance to view that. So just move on to the project schedule. This is just a tentative schedule for key project milestones. For those on the call, I'll run through these real fast. Again, just noting that these are also available online. But the key dates that you'd see here, beginning the project announcement, virtual open house, and right-of-way communication this fall. We would have environmental assessments complete and a certificate of convenience and necessity filed with the Public Utility Commission in spring of 21. The commission would review and approve, or go through that approval process rather, from the spring of 21 to fall of 21. Right-of-way acquisition would begin in fall of 21, and pre-construction and construction activities begin in spring of 22. That'd be followed up by facilities being placed in service in fall of 23, and then right-of-way cleanup and property restoration would also begin in that fall. Just as a note, the schedule is subject to change, but it's what we're working off now. And if it does change, we promise to keep you informed as we continue development. So, again, I apologize to folks on the phone that you're not able to see this next section where we are going to discuss the structures AEP is considering for this project. But I did want to go through these since that's a important component and something that AEP is seeking feedback on. So let's talk about these structures. We're looking at three different types of structures. We refer to them as bold steel lattice, or bold steel monopole, or a traditional monopole. BOLD is an acronym that stands for Breakthrough Overhead Line Design. And then, as you'll see in the following slides, these structures do differ somewhat in appearance from traditional poles, but they're designed to be more compact. So that means that they are also a little bit shorter than traditional pole structures. So, again, as I mentioned, AEP Texas really would like to have your feedback as we're going through the design process. So be sure to share that feedback through the questionnaire or project website, and we'll talk about both those a little bit more later in the presentation. So,
Hey, Michael.
yes.
Hey, would you mind just slowing your tempo down just a tad, just so we can make sure the folks on the phone can follow?
Sure. Yeah, I
Thank
apologize for
you.
that.
That's okay. Thanks.
Okay. So let's talk about these individual structures a little bit. And again, for people on the phone, just a reminder, these are all viewable at the project website. But the first structure, which we call bold steel lattice, you can see it pictured here. Have a typical height of about 130 feet. They would be spaced approximately 1,250 feet apart, constructed of steel, and would require a right of way of about 150 feet. Do have the disclaimer that the exact structure, height, and then right of way requirements for this, and actually all three structures, might vary slightly just based on geography or other factors. So but that's a good generalization of what you might be able to expect. So this is the bold steel lattice. Moving now to the what we call bold steel monopole. This structure would be 115 feet in height and spaced about 1,000 feet apart. Also made of steel and also require a right-of-way width of 150 feet. Just give everyone a second to look at that. And then last is the traditional steel monopole, which I imagine these are probably what most folks on the call are familiar with seeing. These structures would be 155 feet tall, spaced 1,000 feet apart, also built of steel, and then also requiring a right of way of 150 feet. So again, just a reminder, these are viewable at aaptexas.com/angstrom-grissom. So I'd say just a very brief overview of the project itself, but did want to give our regulatory case manager, Randy Roper, an opportunity to discuss the Public Utility Commission's approval process. So Randy, let me take you off mute here, and if you'd be willing to walk through that process, then I'll hand it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Michael. The process at the commission has a very fluid process that allows the landowners to become involved. And so when we first file the application, which will have a adequate number of differentiating routes to present to the commission for their consideration. But when that's done, we also notice all impacted landowners on every route that's there. You'll be given information in that notice that will provide you the ability to see all the different routes, understand where they're at with map, and we'll also have descriptions of the routes by links. And we'll also provide you information on how to participate. There's a brochure that the commission has to send out. And also, you'll be provided forms in order to participate with. That's how you'll get your first intervener comment. And it'll tell you the difference in those notice information that we send out, how to do that. Once the project is filed at the commission, there's a process that allows you to participate within 45 days of that notice. So you have 45 days to get that in, and there's information in that notice package that you get on how to send that information in to participate. There will be a process that we'll go through during that. In this case, this is considered a critical project, and that means that it's critical to the reliability of service and to service to customers in this area. It's driven by growth and load that's occurring in the area, and it has been termed critical to get it done. So this will have 180 days approval process, which is a little bit shorter than what a normal process would be. We will file our direct testimony when we actually file the application, which will help speed up that process. Typically, that's filed later in order to get things moving along. It still would be all this said, and it'll after you have all the intervention, you have a hearing that can be held depending on the intervention process. There'll be judges that'll hear all the different testimonies. There'll be time for discovery, et cetera, prior to that, they'll create a record from all the evidence they get, and they will make a recommendation to the commission what they think the best route is. But it is up to the commission to determine what that route is. They have final say in the route. So from the time that we go through this process and from the time that it goes before the commissioners, none of us really know which route they're going to approve. We will all know at that date that they make that approval. So that's pretty well it in a nutshell. I'm sorry. I mean, there's a lot more to it, but trying to just keep it short for you. That's pretty well how the process works. Any questions?
Hey, Randy. This is Juliet. Yes, Juliet. We do have one question in the chat. It's from Blair Turnbull asking, it's a two-part question. If it's a possibility to bury the line, and if that is not an option, why not? And also a question as to what are the EMF ramifications for individuals living in close proximity to the line?
Okay, the first question, burying it. The burying of a 345 kV transmission line increases cost probably tenfold from that. So from the standpoint that everybody in the state pays for this line, the commission is not going to approve burying a transmission line of this capacity. It's very unusual that a commission ever does that. There's only been a couple of cases, and it's one was because where the cities pay for a portion of it within a city for development. And the other was, well, it was a defense issue because it created a hazard for Air Force operations. Other than that, I haven't seen it done because of the cost. The second is that EMF is a subject matter that comes up a lot from the standpoint that it has a history of different studies that at one point in time showed there were correlations between EMF and childhood leukemia and cancers and stuff. But there was years and years of research, literally millions of dollars went into that, and there was no scientific evidence that ever showed that to happen. Now, that doesn't mean people still are concerned. I hear this concern all the time. But as far as I've been through two proceedings in my lifetime where they went through full court proceedings with testimony being provided by medical doctors and people that are very much more knowledgeable about this than I am. And in both those cases, the judges that heard the cases stated in those final orders that there was just no scientific evidence there. But there is still concern. I understand these are big lines. They can create issues of concern for everybody. And so we try to address that with the way we design them. We do reduce the amount of EMF. The bold structures do that. And we do make sure that when we do construct, we stay away from homes. We make it to where the EMF drops off very fast at the edge of the right-of-way. So we do take prudent steps to make sure that we control it the best we can.
Hi, this is Juliet. I would just also add that anyone who is interested in more information on our aeptransmission.com website, we have an area that addresses electric and magnetic fields, excuse me. And there's quite a bit of information there that also leads you to some third-party sites that are unrelated to AEP that provide additional information.
Are there any other questions?
I don't see any more in the chat right now.
Okay, well, thank you all for attending.
Okay, well, and if anyone does have additional questions regarding the regulatory process, then we'll open it back up for questions here in a few moments. But before we do that, I did just want to reemphasize again that your feedback is critical as we help or as we continue developing this project, rather. And there are a number of ways you can provide that feedback, and I'll go through all these again. But the first would be using the self-addressed stamped envelope to return the questionnaire that was included in the packets that were mailed to landowners last week. That goes to our regulatory group and helps us in that filing process. Alternately, I would just also mention that you can find and print that questionnaire or complete a digital version completely online at the project website, and I'll show that in just a second. Second, I did mention before, but if you use the Contact Us link on the project website, if you have specific concerns or questions regarding your property, then using that link would allow us to contact you directly to address those one-on-one. Or the last thing, you can use the toll-free number that's displayed on the screen, or for folks on the phone, that number is 844-629-4296. Again, that is 844-629-4296. And that'll put you in touch with Randy and our regulatory group, so you can provide your feedback that way as well. I would just say, though, that we do ask if you have feedback that you provide that by Thursday, December 3rd, if at all possible. So I will, I can advance the slide here. I'm so sorry. Okay. Yeah, for everyone who's joined online, I would just like to take a second and just run through the project website. And for folks on the phone, when you have an opportunity, again, the URL for that is aeptexas.com/angstrom-grissom. So I thought I would just highlight a few important components. I've mentioned a lot of these before, but just with the website shown here, allow you to see it. First off, you will see the Contact Us. It's in the gray bar immediately below the project name, and that's where you can submit your questions or concerns for us to address on a one-on-one basis. You'll also see the red submit a comment buttons, and those will allow you, excuse me, allow you to use an interactive map. And on that map, you can drop pins or highlight areas on your property. And that's of really great value to our right-of-way and siding groups. Next, you'll see a link for the virtual open house. And that includes a lot of the same information that you're seeing presented here this evening, but excuse me, also additional information from some of the other project team members on this call. And then I'd also like to just draw your attention. You'll see those plus sign icons. And then by clicking those, you'll see a dropdown. And then under the dropdown labeled documents, that's where you can find a PDF version of the questionnaire and also the FAQ pages that were included in your packets. So if you lose that or need a second copy, then you can download and print one there. And they're also both available in Spanish, should you prefer that. The very last thing on the website that I'd like to just make note of, you'll also see a questionnaire in the gray box below the project title. And that's where, if you would prefer to fill out the questionnaire online and submit it that way instead of mailing it in, that's where you would find that. So just a few highlights of that website. Okay, so I guess I know this has been a lot to take in, but I figure let's open it up for some questions now. Just a quick reminder, again, if you do have questions specific to your property, please use the contact us link on the website. We'd be happy to address those one-on-one. And then I guess for anyone who's using their computer, please type your questions in the chat box through the WebEx client. And then for everyone on the phone, I'm going to unmute everyone on the phone. However, this is kind of one of the quirks of WebEx. You must mute yourself. So that gives you the ability to unmute yourself, but please go ahead and mute yourself again if you're calling in. But again, just unmute yourself if you have a question. So,
Michael?
Yes.
We do have another question in the chat.
Okay.
The question is, does AEP have a preferred route that they are suggesting would be preferred for them?
Randy, defective to you, I'm going to unmute you now if you'd like to answer that one, please.
I was actually, Mr. Turnbull, I was actually sending you a reply back. No, we do not. There is no preferred route. In fact, when we notice, the preferred route is not something we can even notice. Now, we do, when we file the application, we have to identify a route that we think best meets the commission requirements, but that's it. It's not preferred. It's just what we think is best that meets those requirements. It's really left up to the commission to make the decision what that route is, and we won't know until then. So every route that we submit when we file the application is a route we're willing to build.
That is the only
question, Mr. Turnbull.
That is the only other chat question right now that's in the box.
Okay. Real fast, if you are using your phone to call in, if you could mute yourself, please, until you're ready to ask a question, then that would be appreciated. Okay. Sorry, I appreciate everyone. Oh. Okay. Sorry about that. Well, I guess, Velma and Philip, since right-of-way is on this call, why don't we just talk a little bit about the right-of-way communications process? Let me unmute the two of you right now. And maybe if you would just kind of address the way that we communicate with landowners and what landowners might be able to expect in that process.
Yes, I will get started with that, Michael, and Philip can chime in if you'd like. So basically, once the Public Utility Commission has chosen a route, and we are released to contact landowners, and this would happen after regulatory sends out their notification letters to each landowner, identifying the landowners that will be impacted by the selected route. Once that's done, the first step in the right-of-way acquisition is to obtain permission from the landowners, and I should say to schedule appointments to do our pre-acquisition activities, which will help with the engineering of the line. So that would involve soil bore testings, environmental studies, and then our on the ground survey work. We will work that in parallel with the title work for the to identify 100% of the ownership for every impacted parcel. Once we complete our preliminary work, our pre-acquisition work, then the landowners can expect to get an initial offer letter package, which will consist of an easement, a survey plat exhibit, and an offer for the acquisition. Offers are based on fair market value, based on appraisals and market studies that will be done in the area of the chosen route. And then we proceed with negotiations, file the documents, get the documents recorded and sent back to the landowners, and then we continue on with the construction of the line. All in coordination with the landowner, making sure that we identify special conditions and terms, and that's about, and then we settle our construction damages and damage claims are settled at the end of the project as we restore the terrain back to its normal condition. Philip, did I miss anything? Is there any questions?
I think
can you hear me?
For the construction, I wanted to add that
under the right of way, where needed.
I'm sorry, Philip, you broke out. I didn't get to hear the entire comment.
Yeah, I'll have the mic.
Hey, Michael, we might need to mute everyone just so that we can get those couple of comments and then unmute again.
Okay, I apologize, just muted myself there. Okay, Philip, let's maybe try that again and see if we can't pick you up better this time.
Sorry, that mic. Can you hear me? Yeah, there's a lot of.
I tell you what, Philip, if you want, maybe just type your response in the chat and then we can read it. Maybe that would work better because, yeah, we're getting a lot of feedback from the microphone. So might try that. I guess in the meantime, Velma, did you have anything else from what right-of-way perspective or?
No, sir. I one thing I probably do want to mention is that regardless of what structure we go with on the engineering phase, the easement width will be 150 foot wide. That is the normal width for a 345 kV line. So we know landowners normally have that question, and I don't know that they caught that regardless of the structure type, the easement width will be 150 feet. One other thing I wanted to mention is on the chat, I know that the question in regards to the preferred line was posed by Mr. Israel, but Ms. Trimble's question, and maybe not a question, but a comment, was that they are in the process of constructing a new home along one of the route links. That's very important information for us during this phase, Ms. Turnbull. So if you'll please follow the instructions that Michael had recommended, or calling the number, somebody would be more than happy to visit with you on that to get some more precise information. But that will be, that's the kind of information we're trying to gather with this meeting. So thank you for sharing that with us, and we definitely need to get back to you in that regard.
Okay, thank you, Velma. I do see that we have a couple other questions in the chat log. Randy, Terry Blankenship says the December 3rd deadline for comments is pretty short. Are they able to submit comments to the Utility Commission?
No, these comments come in to us at this point in time for us to consider in the modification of the routes that we have. That's what this meeting's about, is trying to help us as we go through and put together our final links and development of routes, that we can identify issues and hopefully address them here. Now once the application is filed, if you want to make comments in the filing pack, in the notice package that we send out at that point in time, there is two forms. That one is a comment form to allow you to file comments with the commission. There's also an intervention form that allows you to, besides just file a comment, is to participate by becoming an intervener. And but at this point in time, for the open house process, we are the ones at this point. This is not even before the commission yet. There's been no docket pulled to even let them know where we're at in the project.
This is Juliet. There were a couple of other questions from Mr. Israel. One is, what criteria does the PUC look at to determine the quote best route? And then asked about the deadline being such a short timeline.
Right now, the way the criteria works, we have a consulting firm that goes through the process of using anywhere from 42 to 44 different type of criteria that the commission, some of it's written into commission rules, some of it comes out of rulemakings they've made, that sort of sets up factors that we look at, all utilities look at, in evaluating the different routes. And so they'll go through a very involved acquisition of information, everything that goes into these tables. And then they'll go through a evaluation process, comparing the different routes each other, and looking at them and coming up with some of the top routes that they feel best meets these criteria. Then we'll look at that information, and we look at some other factors such as construction cost, maintenance cost, accessibility, other things we may look at too, that may factor into what we may think is the best of one of those routes as well. But it still is the commission that makes the determination. We'll file numerous routes for this particular CCN, probably, but could be as many as 12, 14, 15, I don't know yet, but for them to consider. And they'll make the final decision on what that is. And they'll look at all that criteria that we had developed and that will factor into their determination as well.
Randy, a follow-up question to that was, is there a way they could get a list of the criteria? Is there a place on the PUC's website that they kind of list that information out?
No, there's not. Now, there is several, you can go look at several applications that have been filed, and you will see in that information what the criteria is. Is Stacy on? Yeah. We might could probably provide you one of a prior proceeding where there has been, you know, the type of criteria it's looked at, just to sort of show what those tables look like.
Randy, I do believe that our criteria is on your website. I don't know if you can show that, Michael, where that's located.
I apologize. I don't have that pulled up without doing some digging, but I will make myself a note. We'll follow up with Mr. Israel and get him links for that information.
There were a couple of questions, both about the time period. Why are we having this meeting today with the due date of December 3rd, just next week, for input? Can someone expand on that a little bit for our attendees?
I guess I can from that standpoint. This is Randy Roper again. This is based on a project schedule that ERCOT has given us on when this line is needed to be in service. And so we essentially look at that in-service date and start backing up from that point. And with all the different filings that have to be done, getting time for easement acquisition, ordering materials, everything that has to be done through the process, that we sort of back up to this point to where we have the open houses. And it's a very compressed schedule that we are unfortunately faced with for this project to be in service. So that sort of dictates the date. I apologize for it being what it is, but when it came out of ERCOT and they made their recommendation that this was to go forward, that pretty well started the process in place, and we're just trying to work through that process to meet the in-service date.
Randy, is it fair to say that if someone has a comment on December 4th and contacts us, that we will not just dismiss that comment? It will be taken into consideration as well. We just need to really kind of push to have those comments back by next week to stay on that schedule, but we won't necessarily dismiss a comment we receive after that date, obviously before we file.
No, we will not. We will not. We'll work with you.
There was another question, again, from Mr. Israel. We were told earlier that AEP didn't have any choice in route selection, but now it appears that you do. So perhaps maybe just a little expansion on the process of the siting team's work to identify route links and then how that goes into the PUC so that they can determine from that information the best route. I don't know if you want to expand on that a little bit more.
I guess I don't understand from Mr. Israel in that regards, is that we have a bunch of factors we have to look at. And right now we haven't even put those factors together. I mean, the factors, all the information that needs to flow into that, those tables that we have to put together with all those factors, we haven't done that analysis yet. So we do not know which one of those may look better than another one. We're on the very beginning of that process. So the first thing we do is we come to these open houses to start getting input from the landowners and stuff that may impact what alternatives we're going to look at. This is our preliminary routes. This is what we throw out there. And we want to make sure we have the input from landowners to make any adjustments to those. So this allows us then, based on this input, we may make changes to some of these links, we may delete some of these links, and we may add a link. here and there. It really depends on how much input out here, because we can't get on the ground. We haven't been out there. There are things like the house being built that was mentioned that we hope to get out of these meetings to help us do a better job of putting together those final alternative routes.
Mr. Israel had another question, but I hope that Randy's additional comments address that, as this is the starting point for the project. He did have another question just now. Will economic factors override a landowner's request to move the easement?
I guess, well, let me put it back in this way. Once we follow the application with all the different alternative routes that we put in at that point in time, one of the factors the commission will look at is cost. And so they'll look at the other factors too, but cost is a factor as well. So it's sort of balancing out those. They may not pick the cheapest route. I've seen them not do that. I've seen them pick, you know, some routes halfway in between. But they have to balance it like we do. We do our best to balance these routes when we look at them. But cost is an important factor.
Thanks, Randy.
Okay. Seeing no other questions in the chat, let me go ahead and unmute folks on the telephone one more time. I muted everyone again while we were having some feedback issues. So if you do have a question and you're on the phone, then I'll take you off mute for a few moments here to get one in. We may not have any immediately on the phone. I know, Kinsley, would you like to talk some about the siting process? I know Randy went into that a little bit, but just kind of when you're looking at siting options, maybe discuss what that entails.
Sure. And actually, so Stacy is our consultant, and I think she would even be able to go in further in detail. So Stacy, I'm going to defer that to the consultant and yeah.
Okay. So when we approach any project, we are usually given by our client the endpoints. So in this case, we were given the existing Engstrom station and the existing Grissom station. Or I guess Engstrom is underway. And from there, we define a study area that's large enough so that we can find enough geographically diverse number of routes. And the reason we have to look at multiple routes, as Randy mentioned earlier, that it is required by the Public Utility Commission to submit multiple routes. We can't just submit one or two. We have to have several, and they have to be, you know, spaced out so they're not unduly on one landowner or all going in one direction or the other. So once we have our study area, then we start to collect data. And the data, if you look on that criteria list, I can type in the chat in a minute where it's located on the Engstrom to Grissom project website, but it's where they show all the different boards that have been created for this project. And on that list, it's pretty standard. Most of the criteria, the things vary from the length of the right-of-way, or the length of the route, rather, types of wetlands potentially crossed, number of habitable structures within 500 feet of the particular route. And so the different categories are land use, biological resources, aesthetics, and cultural resources. And there's about 40, 43 different criteria that are used. So once we have those criteria, and we will custom make them, some of them for the particular study area, depending on what's out there in this study area. And then we'll start drawing links. And we call them links because they're really not end-to-end routes yet. So everywhere that a link crosses another link, you know, at a little node, it gives it a different number. So on the maps that you were sent, you know, you see a bunch of little numbers on these little links on the map. And that's actually how you can refer to them when you're sending your comments. Thank you, Michael. There are about 40 some odd different links. So when you're writing your comments, when you're filling out your questionnaire, if you say, you know, link 37 is near my property, or I'm building a home near link 45, just make sure those types of comments are placed into there so that we can look at them and see if we need to make any adjustments near your property. So once we have these links, then we come to the public meeting. And as Michael had said, normally we do this in person. And it is a little bit of a strange time for us having to do this virtually. So I thank you all for joining us as we embark on this virtual public meeting. So we have these, we're presenting them to you. AEP really does want your feedback, and they'll give us all your questionnaires. I work for Power Engineers, if you didn't catch that. So we're the environmental company drafting the environmental assessment. So we'll get all your comments. We'll kind of collate them together, and then we'll meet with AEP and talk about any modifications to the links that may be necessary. Once we've done that, then we start putting end-to-end routes. And that's where we will take, you know, all the way from the Angstrom station, pick a bunch of different links, put them together to make what an end-to-end route. From there, we analyze those end-to-end routes. So then we're going back to that criteria list, and we create this giant data table for each and every route that we have so that we can kind of compare them. We at Power in our environmental assessment will make a recommendation of which route from an environmental and land use perspective looks favorable based on how the PUC selects their routes. And then AEP will look at other factors such as construction, ease of access, and they will make a determination if they agree with our recommendation or not. Ultimately, they will make a recommendation to the Public Utility Commission. And again, because this is an ERCOT critical project, as Randy was speaking about, they'll only have 6 months to make a decision. A normal PACE project would take a year, but because this line is so critical, it's going to be done in 6 months, which is why everything feels really compressed schedule-wise. So once the environmental assessment is done and they've selected and made a recommendation of a route that fits the PUC criteria, that document will be filed. Velma's group will mail out letters to everyone saying, you know, the CCN has been filed, and in that will be documentation on how you can continue to be part of the process. Right now, you're participating in the process by participating in our open meeting. If you want to continue on the process, keep informed, you'll file paperwork to be an intervener. And once you do that, then you'll see all the different documents that will be filed. And at some point, you'll be asked to either write a statement of position or to submit testimony. But either way, being an intervener just keeps you informed of what's going on and so that you can have your voice heard. So AEP recommends going through that process if your property is going to be crossed by the potential project, by one of the routes. Did I miss anything? How's that, Randy? Kensley?
I you did real well, Stacy. I was just going to mention one thing else for those that are still listening, is that the importance of you participating in the commission process is where the decisions are being made at. And so when we file and we make a recommendation, what we think is the best route, that don't think that that's going to be the one that they're going to pick, because I have seen them pick different routes on numerous occasions. So until they decide, we really don't know what the route is. And there's a process set up that allows them to obtain the necessary information that they that they get at the end of the cases for them to make that decision. And once they make that decision, that's final. And so it is important for y'all to participate if you can.
Randy, Mr. Israel has a question to follow up on that. He asks, will you not give your suggestion on the route?
When we file the application, we have to identify what the best route we believe is. And so when we file the CCN, we will identify that in the CCN application. That's the and you'll have to go look at the CCN application. That's the only way you're going to know what we thought the best route would be. And like I said, that's that they may totally disagree with that. And so that's that is why you do need to participate. You really do.
All right, I appreciate that, Randy. Would just like to, I've gone back to schedule here in the slideshow for those of you who are on the computer. Just talk a little bit more about what happens after PUC makes their decision in terms of what kind of communications you might be able to expect. We would be sending a landowner or a letter rather to all the landowners who would be affected by the final line route, notifying of them that that determination. And then we would be in communication following that during the easement acquisition phase, and then also to notify you about any kind of field activities or survey work and all that, and of course, until construction starts. So that would really kick off following next fall after the PUC had made its decision. So I just want to kind of let people know that, you know, the filing wasn't going to be the end of what you'd be hearing from us, but that, you know, those communications would continue. So, Randy, do you have anything else to add about subsequent landowner communications after the PUC makes that determination?
Yes, I will. Once the commission does make the determination, we will put together a filing, not filing, well, we actually file it too, but we'll be putting together a notice that'll go out to the impacted landowners. And so the impacted landowners will know what the final route is. We'll provide them some additional information with that, including the final order. So I have the map showing the final route. I'll have the final order. And there'll be some additional information in regards to easement that will prepare them for the easement acquisition process that when that happens later. We will also, some point in time after we do the notice to the impacted landowners, we'll do also a notice follow-up later to the non-impacted landowners to let them know that they're no longer subject to the proceeding.
All right, Randy, appreciate that. Well, I'm not really seeing any additional questions in the chat. Let me just unmute everyone who's called in one more time, just in case there have been some call-in attendees that to have questions that they'd like to ask. So I'll do that now. Okay, well,
so any distance that's being built on one of the route lines, that needs to just go in comments.
I'm so sorry, you kind of cut out there at the beginning. Were you asking if your comments specifically regarding your property should go in the comments? Was that the question?
Yes, any new construction that's being built on the projected route line that goes in comments. Is that what the lady said that was speaking earlier? Just to add that in comments for you all.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, that'd be of great value. And then if you provide that information to us, then we can have a right-of-way agent speak with you one-on-one to get even more specificity about the location and plans. So, but that would just alert us that that was a concern.
Okay. Thank you.
Michael, can I make a suggestion, please?
Yes.
To the attendees that are on the call, the information that we obtain for the mail outs and the notices is taken from the appraisal district office. So for example, if your property is listed under Valstar Cattle Company, then if you, when you submit your information questionnaire and any information on the website, if you wouldn't so much mind to put your entity, if you are operating under a company or a ranch, a ranching operation, and if you would add that information in there, I think it would be very helpful. Sometimes it's a little difficult to correlate.
Am I understanding you correctly that if we own a cattle company and we are under operating under a ranch, LLC, LTD, or anything else, you want that listed in the comments? Is that correct?
Ma'am, more so if you're submitting a questionnaire under your personal name, Velma Starr, and your property is listed at the appraisal district under
Okay. Well, because you sent it on, okay, so if you've sent it to our company and our personal names, then there's that's fine.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. But just so we know who you're representing when you submit the questionnaire.
Okay. Okay.
So we can correlate the two.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Do we have any other questions, phone or chat?
Michael, there is another question on the chat. Let me make sure I didn't miss one here. Easement purchase will be a large portion of the project cost. How can a determination be made without knowing what that portion of the project will be?
I'll start and Velma can finish up. What we do is we take cost from prior projects. We build projects all over the state in Texas and South Texas a lot. And so we'll take costs from prior projects that we actually paid for easements from different projects and sort of merge those into an estimate on what we think the easement cost is going to be. Now, there's a little bit additional work that will be done by our right-of-way folks in putting that cost together for easement, but they'll use that historical information and other information they have to provide to us what they think an adequate easement cost will be to use in our project estimates. For each route that we file with the application, we'll have all these different pieces of cost that flowed into those estimates for the total line construction for each route. Del, you want to add to that?
Yes, that basically that's the process of Randy. The only other thing I may add is that, and we do take a historical data and we do look at appraisal district information, any market studies that have been done in the area. And then once the route is selected, then the costs related to that specific line route are then researched further to make sure we're providing the market value appropriately. Also because this line crosses three different counties, so there's some differences there. So yes, sir, I think that might answer the question.
This is Juliet again. I wanted to go back. Stacy actually posted a link to those who can get in the chat to the virtual open house on the website that Michael's mentioned a few times. And within that, there's a land use board, and that lists several criteria, and that is the criteria that is considered as part of the CCN process. So just wanted to make sure if, for those who asked, you can access that through the virtual open house on the land use board. And we'll also post a link for a typical application, a certificate of convenience and necessity application, which is what this project will have, so that you all can take a look at that for those who are able to access the chat. And Michael, you might be able to provide some of this additionally on the website for folks who can't get to it tonight on the chat.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. Let's see. I'm not seeing any other questions in the chat. Let me just open the telephones back one more time. May not have any more questions on the call either. Well, I guess if anything else comes up, then for sure chime in here real fast. But that said, hopefully this has been of value to everyone. Just want to just, you know, mention that if anyone has any additional questions, I know we went over a lot this evening, but please, again, use that contact us link on the project website, which is, again, aaptexas.com/Angstrom-DeGrissom, or feel free to reach out to me directly, and I can help you navigate that website or also put you in touch with the right project team members. Again, my name is Michael Harris. My contact information is on screen, but for those on the phone, my direct number is 918-599-2553, or my email address is mhharris@aep.com. One more time, that is 918-599-2553. Or email mhharris@aep.com. So, and this recording, for folks who are on the phone, this recording will also be available on the website tomorrow. So if there were any slides that you want to take a look at, then certainly you might check that out. But also, again, most of this information is available separate from this recording, or will be available separate from this recording, in that virtual open house section on the website. So, well, I guess that said, if no one else has any questions, then we all very much appreciate you taking time out on a Tuesday evening on a holiday week. So just would say on behalf of AAP Texas, I wish everyone a happy and safe Thanksgiving. So thank you for attending.